Okay, now, you remember the first name of your first husband?
Austin.
Austin. Okay. Now, you were talking before the other tape finished about James moved to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, you had to tell him that, you know, he had to find another place to live.
That's right.
Okay. Can you go on from there?
Well,
under the premise that we were kind of talking about where you went, like you said, you want to change your life, right?
He moved. He found a place to live, and he. Well, he moved. He found a place to live, and he had a job. And next thing I know, he met Alice, and they got married.
What was Alice's maiden name?
I don't remember. But anyhow, she came from real poor background.
She's from Detroit. Now, you say she was from Detroit.
Yeah, she's from Detroit. And she and her sister had been really mistreated by her stepmother in terms of taking them out of school and making them go to work, waiting table, and things of that sort. But she was really a sweet person, soft, and, you know, really kind. You just liked her.
Yeah, still do.
That's right. And about within the year, or maybe a little, I don't remember how long they've been married, they had this beautiful, beautiful baby boy. And he was beautiful. And he looked just like those pictures that you used to see of his baby on ivory soap. But he was beautiful. And,
name?
James Jr. And, so anyhow, he was about, I think he was about a year old, something like that. I don't recall him. Anyhow, I got my things all ready. I had the moving company come and pack up all my furniture. And
where were you going?
To Minneapolis.
Okay.
And my father was waiting for me to come. And James helped me to drive my car to Minneapolis, and we brought the baby with us so my father could see him, because my father had never seen him, first grandchild. And I remember when we were getting in the car and getting ready to take off, Alice was standing there. She says, "Francis, don't let anything happen to my baby." And he could walk, you know, he was walking, but he was somewhere between 1 and 2 years old. I've forgotten now how old he was. But he was a darling baby. And anyhow, we got to Minneapolis, all right. And James did all the driving. And he stayed a few days. And then he went back on the train. Took the baby back with him on the train. And I went out there to school and got all my business in order. And started school in the fall semester. And I was in school. I was there for 2 years, from 44 through 46. And I did a lot of private duty nursing while I was there too, which I had not really planned on doing. But Dr. Weinstein, who was the chief of surgery, saw me over in the medical library. And he remembered me from my student days. But it was so gratifying to see so many of the doctors and nurses there to remember me from my student days. And doctor was. He wanted to know when I was going to come and take care of some of his patients. And I said, oh, I don't know. Because I had a really good reputation as a good nurse. And I said, well, I don't really know because I'm trying to get used to being back in school. And as soon as I can see my way, I said, I'll let you know, Dr. Weinstein. And he did very dramatic surgery on his patients. Took out whole stomachs when that was, had everybody boog-eyed. And he didn't operate on any patient without a private duty nurse around the clock for 3 days and longer if necessary. And I'm telling you, those doctors kept me busy when I started.
But you were going to school for something else.
But I go to school during the day, and I do private duty at night. And then the next morning, I'd be in class at 8 o'clock, and I'd be so sleepy, I could hardly stay awake. Because it was hard. Because, see, when you worked those cases, you were doing something every minute. Even though you only had one patient, you were doing something every minute. Because they had them on all kinds of machines and whatnot and so forth and so on. And, but it was a rewarding experience. Of course, the money was fantastic. And
what was your goal in school? You were going to school?
Get a degree in education so I could teach.
Okay. Did you finish that?
Oh, certainly. Uh-huh. Certainly. I have a high school teacher's certificate.
Did you work all the while you were going to school?
Well, more or less. But I worked, when it was time for me to, see, I was on the registry, private duty nurses registry. And when I had an exam coming up, see, I would sign off of the registry. And I would just tell them, I'm not taking any more cases now because I have to study for an exam. And I had a number of doctors who would postpone their operations if they weren't emergencies, waiting for me to be available to be on the case.
You were that good.
Oh, I was flattered to death. I didn't know I was that good.
So what happened when you got your teaching certificate?
Well, somebody that I knew had met on campus at the University of Minnesota, went down to Meharry for an interview for a job. She was in public health. And she was talking to the director of nurses, naturally, because we had a public health division, because there was a school of nursing at Meharry. And it was a degree school of nursing. In other words, when you finished that school of nursing, you had a bachelor's degree in nursing. And so she told Al McGould, who was the director of nursing, about me. So Ms. Galt wrote me a letter and asked me to come for an interview. And I was flabbergasted. And to let her know, and they would send me the ticket. They paid my way down there and back, provided a place for me to stay while I was there. And I went down for an interview and stayed in Nashville for 3 days. Went through Chicago and bawled around Chicago for another 5 days. So I was gone a week on other folks' money.
And had a good time.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
What was the job you interviewed for?
Assistant Director of Nurses.
And Meharry.
Yes. And so anyhow, I interviewed and, you know, they showed me the whole place and everything and talked to me at length, and I had to meet the president of the school. You know, you know the interviewing process.
Sure.
And they wanted to know what I thought. Well, Miss Galt was white. Extremely wonderful lady. And but we had a mixed faculty there anyhow. And but she was just a wonderful person. And so, anyhow, you know, she wanted to know, was I interested? And I said, yes, I'm very interested. But I really would like to give it a little thought, and I'll call you and follow that up with a letter after I get back to Minneapolis. And so, when I got back home, I talked to my mother about it. No, my mother wasn't there, my father.
Okay.
Of course, my father, his chest was poking out. But see, when I could have taught at the University of Minnesota. And because I wouldn't take a job at the University of Minnesota, he just really gave me a hard time because he thought that was so fantastic. And I told him, I don't want to stay in Minneapolis. I don't care if they gave me the school. Because first of all, there aren't any men here, and the men are either too old or they're too young. And I want to go where there's going to be some men, because one of these days I hope to get married again. And now, I didn't know anything about Meharry, had never even heard of Meharry hunting. And when I got down there and saw what I saw,
tough.
Child, I love Meharry. I love Nashville. Sometimes I'm real sorry I didn't stay. And so anyhow.
Do you remember the year that you took your position?
Yeah, 1946.
Okay.
Yeah, the fall of 1946. And Meredith's mother helped me to drive to Nashville. Edie Sizer, you remember her?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, Edie and I were real good buddies. Meredith used to get so mad at us because Meredith was so prissy and proper all the time. Her mother and I, we'd just get down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so Edie was a really good driver, and she's a fearless person. Anyhow, we drove. She and then I put her on the plane that night and paid her fare back to the Twin Cities. Because I wouldn't drive that way by myself the first time I was going down there, although I'd driven back and forth several times. And, but when I got back, you know, as I said, my father was really, he couldn't see why I couldn't stay there.
And teach.
And I told him, I don't want to. And I'm not going to. I said, these 2 years have been nothing but study. And then working at home, you know, doing stuff around the house. Because it was, I had a lot of girlfriends and things like that, and I dated a few times, but you know, the men were either too young or they were too old. They were stupid.
I think that maybe your father was lonely.
Oh, I'm sure of that, because I'm sure he was real happy I was there. But we used to have a lot of fun. I had a couple of really great parties, you know, because I'd always ask him. And, see, I think Mildred was there then.
Mildred?
Bohannon.
Mm.
All my buds were there.
Okay.
But you see, all these girls are married. And, but we had a really great party. I don't remember the occasion, but it was some particular occasion. And we took all the furniture out of the dining room, my father did, put it in the garage. So they had the whole dining room to dance in. And just had a ball. Mm-hmm. But I had a couple parties like that. And,
playing recorded music?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was. I don't even remember. You know, we didn't have a band.
Yeah.
And, but I'm sure, I'm pretty sure it was. Mildred probably remember more about it than I would.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, you got to Meharry in 1946.
It was marvelous.
How long did you stay?
7 years. And I met Horace in May 1st, we've been married. I think we got married 51. Hey?
Yeah.
What year did we get married in?
Me?
Yeah,
we. All right, I met him in 1949. And we went together for 2 years before we married. And we married in May 1951.
He was a student at Meharry.
Yeah, he was end of his sophomore year. Because, see, he finished his sophomore year in June. And I had sworn by God I wasn't going to marry anybody that was in school. But you see, I did. And
must have been the eyebrows. I'm just kidding.
No, it was.
It was time.
Well, the whole thing was that we had a little few problems, you know. It was a tempestuous. Because, you know, I wasn't taking much.
Mm-hmm.
And another man that I was very, very interested in, fact matter, we were serious. And he had gone to Chicago for his internship at Providence Hospital in Chicago. And every time he had a chance, you know, he'd come back to Nashville to see me, which wasn't often because he was an intern. And so, he's in Houston, Texas right now.
Do you know his name?
Oh, sure, Bob Bacon.
He's a physician?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, But I always had a lot of reservations about him because he was tall, very dark, but a charmer, handsome. But I always had a lot of reservations about it because of the fact that he was younger than I was. See, everybody thought I was 10 years younger than I really was.
Probably still do.
Oh, yes. Because people almost faint if they'd happen to find out how old I am. Dr. Davis couldn't believe it. I had to show her my driver's license.
Okay. Now...
And he wasn't that much younger. He was about... Bob was about... He was about 5 years younger than I was, I think. Something like that. Maybe not that much even. But see, in those days, you didn't marry anybody younger than you. If they were 1 year younger, you didn't do it. Or 2 years younger. And the only thing, and the little Fisk girls, you know, Fisk University is right across the street.
Right.
And those little Fisk girls, you know, they were just drool when they could see Bob Bacon. Because Bob was tall and he was sharp. And he was nice. He was attentive. Like on my birthday, I walked into my office one day and here was a whole dozen of long-stem red roses on my desk. I said, where'd this come from? And some of the other faculty people came and said, girl, that man sure must be in love with you. Do you know that he probably took his whole week's food allowance? Because, you know, everybody was poor. It was in medical school. Because they were going to school on the GI Bill or loans or whatever Mom and Pa could give them, see. And they said, that cost a fortune. So I said, well.
How about that?
I didn't know he was going to do it, and I didn't. I was shocked.
Pleasantly shocked.
Oh, yes, but he did all kinds of really nice things, and he was, you know, he had a lot of honorable things about him. I had a car. He didn't have any car. And when he'd come to take me out, if he didn't have gas money, we couldn't take the car. We had to walk wherever we were going.
Sounds like a very proper man.
Well, he was...
A charmer.
Yeah, that's right. And he'd say, I don't have any money tonight, just ice cream cones. he'd buy me an ice cream cone, and he'd have an ice cream cone. But of course, you know, the way Meharry is, that you walked up to Jefferson, see there was a little theater there and restaurants and just all kinds of things, drugstore, things like that.
Francis, tell me about Meharry proper and your job there and how you felt about it.
Well, I liked it very much. I mean, it was
7 years, a long time.
But it was very, well, I was in the School of Nursing, and so I worked with student nurses and I taught school, you know, taught classes. Mm-hmm. And then 1 year, they sent me for a whole month to visit college campuses. All over the South. I guess I went to. I was at every state in the Union except Florida and Virginia. Every Southern state. To meet with the students and talk about the School of Nursing at Meharry. And for when they asked me to do it, I said, I can't do that. And they said, oh yes, you can. I said, I can't do that. They said, you can do it. Because they felt that I had the personality to do something like this, and I certainly knew enough about the school. I'd been there a couple of years, maybe.
Well, you did it.
I was gone for a whole month. Every night I was in a different place. Okay. I was on trains, buses, and planes.
The look on your face as you're describing Meharry tells me that you enjoyed yourself a lot.
Oh, yes. Had a ball. Mm-hmm. Then the next big thing that happened to me, Miss Gall called me in her office, and she said that I was going to get a new assignment. I said, really? And she said that they wanted to start a school for, okay, they call them practical nurses then. In California, they call them vocational nurses.
Okay.
And the school had to be developed.
Had to be what?
Developed.
Okay.
And she wanted me to head that up. I said, I can't do that. I said, Miss Gall, you don't...
Who, me?
I can't do that. Look, they knew so little about vocational nursing because that was a real new thing, and the professional nurses were extremely rabid when the subject came up. They didn't want them to wear caps, and they didn't want them to wear white stockings and all that kind of stuff. And the State Department of Nursing didn't even have any information for you on what they should learn, how much they should learn, how long should it take them. Nothing. They had five broad categories that had to be developed. I had to develop the whole curricula, the entire program. And I was under the supervision of the Board of Education of the City of Nashville. And I was loaned to the City of Nashville for 6 months. And I had to develop this program from scratch. I had to set up the training room. I had a unlimited fund of money. And I bought everything from hospital beds to the monitors. And I think I had six beds. And everything you'd ever want, syringes, the monitors, anything you'd ever use in nursing.
I'm impressed. I am.
Well, this...
This is like, what, 1952,
53? No, it was before I married her.
Okay.
So I'd been there...
49 or 50.
Yeah. I wasn't married to him then. And then I had to teach this class. And I probably had about 40 people in the class. But it was such a profound and rewarding pleasure to teach these women. Very heterogeneous group. All levels of educational ability. Many, many, many different kinds of backgrounds. So you see, what I had to work with tested my ability as a teacher. You can believe that. And sometimes I was just two chapters ahead of them in the book.
Had to be.
Because I just didn't have time to really prepare nothing I wasn't. See, you had to break this thing down so they could understand.
Sure, I understand everything. That's why I'm so impressed by the fact that they entrusted you with this responsibility.
Well, not only that.
And you exceeded their expectations.
Well, not only that. This school was the basis for all of the vocational training in the state of Tennessee. And they had they had to have a certain amount of time on the wards, you know, under supervision, so they could learn how to work with real patients. Because we had dummies in the classroom, and I used oranges for them to learn how to give injections, because they had to learn how to stick the needle in a person without killing them.
Yeah.
And so it was, as I said, an extremely, extremely rewarding experience to work with those women, because they wanted to learn. They were hungry for education and for training, and they were so, so thankful to be able to have this opportunity to get out of the white folks' kitchen.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. It was really fantastic, I'm going to tell you. And I did that for 6 months. And see, by the time I had done that for 6 months, I think each time it was 3 months, I taught two classes. And then I said I was ready to go back to Meharry. So they had to find someone to come in and take over. And they found somebody. I think she was a white girl. I don't remember now. I really don't remember. But anyhow, they all found employment. And what we did at Meharry, those that I knew had the ability, they were trained for special areas, like to work in the delivery room, to work in the operating room, and to work in the labor room. And they were given special training under supervision to be able to do that. As I tell you, it was fantastic. It was a really fantastic experience.
Question. After, it seems like, obviously, your single life is coming to an end. Who was, up to this point, up to before you met Horace and all that?
Oh, I had married before then.
Right.
I had a second husband.
Okay, but... until...
And he died.
Right. Up until... I mean, after the first husband?
Yeah. I had a first husband that I married. Robert Walker. I married him.
This was number two.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I was married to him.
Did this occur while in Tennessee?
Yes. And he died. I started going for it. See, he had TB. So he was in a TB hospital up in Kentucky. So he didn't have any good facility in Nashville. And it was a very unpleasant experience. Because I've been married to him 4 days, and he was sick.
He didn't tell you. Sorry.
And this is what was so painful to me. He came from one of the first families in Nashville. Mm-hmm. He was another charmer. Mm-hmm.
Name again?
Robert Walker. And I'll have to show you a picture of it. Mm-hmm. It's real good looking. Mm-hmm. And he was really one of the most interesting men I have ever known in my life. Mm-hmm. He is the only man that I have ever spent an entire night talking to, just sitting down, just talking, all night long. He had a wealth of experiences, plus opinions, plus a tremendous vocabulary. And it was, well, he was an accountant. And he was interesting. He was fun. And see, I've always been a person, I never could mix with dumb men. They always had to have something on the ball, intellectually. And I met him through some friends. They were just dying friendly. Well, he saw me somewhere. And he asked these friends, did they know me? They said yes. They were two guys that owned a funeral home. And they told me they had somebody they wanted me to meet. I said, who? You know, who that? Who that? Who that? And so I happened to be over to the funeral home one day, and he came in there while I was there. So then this guy tells me, that's him. I said, and oh, he just got all enamored, you know, and every time I moved, he moved and all that. And I said, wait a minute.
Chill out a little bit.
So anyhow, that began that. And I guess maybe we went together for about almost 2 years, something like that. And all of his family, he had a lot of brothers and sisters. They were all doing well, you know. And they all seemed to like me. And I really was like this about marrying him because he drank too much for me. And I was always like that.
I get the idea. He asked you.
Oh, yes. And his sister said, you've got to. He'll die if you don't marry him. He'll absolutely die. I said, well, you know, Bob just drinks too much for me. And I just, you know, I just don't know. Well, anyhow, we finally agreed. And his family gave us a wedding, Christmas time. It was small. It was in the house. But it was very, very nice because he had one sister who lived in Cincinnati who was fabulous as a cook. She came up and made all this fancy food. She was the boss. She told everybody what to do.
Did any of the members of your family make it to the wedding?
Oh, no. There wasn't anybody to ask.
Oh, I got two brothers.
Well, yes, but... I don't think I even told him. Mm-hmm. I told my father.
Okay.
He said, well, I hope you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's what he had to say.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's fine. I hope you know what you're doing.
Okay.
And, no, it was just a very small thing. I didn't want it. I didn't even want that. Because, you know, second marriages. Because he'd been married before, too.
Uh-huh.
But he'd been divorced for many years. And he had a wonderful son.
Uh-huh.
Who used to come to... He lived with his mother in... In Milwaukee. I forgot. But anyhow, Bobby used to come to visit his father, and And the family told me, he said, well, you're the only person that his father's been interested in that he ever liked. So you've got to be all right. Because Bobby and his father were very close. And Bobby was a handsome kid.
Okay, you say that 4 days after the wedding he found out about his illness.
Well, he got sick.
All right. And how long after you were married did he pass?
2 years.
And he was just sick.
Oh, no. I said, well, what's the matter? I came home and worked one day, and he was talking about he didn't feel good. And I said, well, what's the matter? And I don't know. He just kept on. So after 4 days, I said, look, we're going to the doctor. So we did. And the doctor took the x-rays and everything. And he didn't say anything that night.
Hang on a second.
But he came to my office the next morning. And he was one of my favorite doctors on the faculty.
You can hold it if you want.
And he sat down, and he looked so solemn and everything. I said, what's the matter? And so then he told me that he hated to tell me, but that he had tuberculosis, and his lungs were moth-eaten. Full of holes. I was stunned. So I got up and I ran into Miss Gall's office because her office was right next to mine. Ran into her office and I just cried and whooped and hollered and walked up and down. Oh, I just carried on. So of course, everybody was extremely disturbed. And, so I called his brother John, who lived in Louisville. He was kind of like the head of the family. See, his mother was really old, but she was alive, you know what I mean? She was in tune. Oh, yes. But she, you know, she had a lot of grown kids. I think he had about 6 or 7 kids in that family. And they were all grown. I think a couple had died. I'm not really sure. No, I don't remember. And I asked John, would he please come down? So he came down and sitting with the family and talking to them, they were absolutely shocked to discover that I did not know that he had this condition. Now,
they knew.
Yes. And they said that why he was, that was the reason he was ever in the service. You see, back in those days, first thing you ask a guy, well, where were you in the service? And if they weren't in the service, then you want to know why. They were 4F, see. And now, he told me he wasn't in the service because he had broken his leg at the time they called him, because they had selective service then. At the time they called him, and they wouldn't take him because he was on crutches. And they never called him back. That's what he told me. But the family told me that the reason they didn't take him because he had a spot on his lung. And see, he wouldn't take care of himself. Because back in those days, you know, a lot of people had TB. You rarely see anyone with TB nowadays. We're getting a lot of it now because of the Asian people that are here. Because they come with it already. And the way they live, you know, everybody all packed up in one room and things of that sort. And I said, no, he did not tell me. His son came down, and of course, his son by that time, he was old, like a high school kid, 17, something like that. And he just couldn't believe his father hadn't done. I said, well, he didn't. And I'll tell you why. I'm pretty sure this is why. He knew I would have never married him. And I wouldn't have. Because I really was like this about it anyhow, see? And
say that again.
This was a terrible, terrible shock to me. And this is when I gained weight. First time I ever gained any weight. I was always small. And I'd never weighed over 135 pounds in my life. And usually, I don't think I weighed 135. I probably weighed between 125 and 130. That's what I weighed when I was in Nashville, because I was very slim. And in 2 months, I gained 40 pounds, because I was so distraught. And I would get up in the middle of the night and cook a steak. I was just eating around the clock.
Let me ask you a question, get away from this part. When you look back at your life up to that point, who in your mind now was probably your greatest mentor? It can be more than one person. Just who do you owe a lot to for direction, guidance, whatnot?
My mother. The only thing I had to say when my mother died was that she lived to see all of her children grown, which was one, a big concern to her. But my mother was a very important force in my life.
Okay, now let's talk about the early days. I mean, he was a student at Meharry, and you were working. And,
yeah, I was director of nursing service.
Okay.
And by that time, I had a new position.
All right.
They talked me into this.
Okay. Well, yeah. How'd you meet Horace?
A girl that was a classmate of his was also someone that I knew. And she used to be a nurse. And she decided to go into medicine. And so... And Hazel had lived with me at one time when she didn't have any place to stay. And so she decided that I needed a boyfriend. And so she brought Horace to my house one day. And that's how we met. We sat there and played cards. She and her see, was she married to this man? Yeah, she was married. She and her husband, and who was also in medicine. And Horace, they came to my house, and we played cards, and then I made sandwiches and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that I wasn't divorced. And my Bob was in the sanitarium of Louisville. Mm-hmm. It was Hopkinsville, Kentucky. That's where it was. And I used to drive up there every other Sunday, which was 100 miles one way. You know, bring him a lot of stuff and spend the day with him and stuff like that. But, and the medical director of the hospital was an old friend of mine from years and years before then. And so, but he was not obedient to the hospital routine. Another thing, he would bribe the orderlies to go out and buy him liquor, and he had a bottle of liquor in the day.
Bob would do this. Okay.
And then on top of that, you know, he really, he felt that he had mistreated me in terms of not being honorable, see?
You mean about not telling me about his
sickness? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think a lot of people would agree with that.
And the thing is that he was some days when I go up there, he'd be very difficult. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was part of his physical condition, too, because he was, the doctors told me he was never going to get well. It was just a matter of time, see. And so, and he was so hateful that I just decided one time, I'm crazy. That man hadn't given me one loaf of bread. I've been married to him actually 4 days. I'm not coming back up here. Because he does not know how to talk. He does not know how to treat me. And I am a fool. And so I came back, and I went over to his mother's house weekend that his sister was down from Cincinnati. She used to come from Cincinnati a lot. And I just told him, I said, no, I'm not going back up there to see Bob. So the members of the family will have to go to see him. Because these are my reasons, and I laid them all out. And I don't think I've been treated fairly in this situation. Another thing, if he wasn't so abusive when I go up there, and I know why he's doing it, but it's still unacceptable. And I also want you to know that I'm going to date. See? They said, well, they couldn't blame him. And so I said, you know, I love you all dearly and all of that. But
this is his family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I told him before. I told anybody else. And then I went around to the president, Mary, and I went to Miss Galt's office, and I told him the same thing. Of course, they knew the circumstances. And I just said, no, I just want you to know, because, you know, back in those days, you didn't walk in shorts and be on the faculty. I mean, you didn't see students walk around in shorts. They used to have, you may have shorts on, but you'd have a skirt that time around here and button down the front. I used to keep that. I walk around in shorts in my house and keep that skirt by the front door. If somebody came, I'd throw it on. Because that was a no-no. And faculty had to be, you know,
special.
Well, women just didn't do things in those days like they do now. Hell, that's been 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And so anyhow,
Hazel introduced you to Horace.
Mm-hmm. And so we started going out. A couple days later, he called me up and asked me to go to the movies. So then I called Hazel up, and I was rolling around on my bed and saying, I scored. He called me up and take me to the movies.
Girl talk.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. And so we started, you know, going out and started dating. And things, you know, were just having fun. And when Christmas came, I mean, he went home. Yeah, he went to Columbus.
The first date that you had with him was at what time of the year? Like, approximately what month?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, you mentioned that Christmas came and then he went home.
Well, yeah, but see, everybody had a break from school and usually went home. And we weren't that, you know, involved.
But at the time this Christmas came was the same year that you started seeing him.
Probably.
Okay.
I don't really remember.
It's not important. You said
no.
You went home for Christmas. So.
Yeah, I just remember that. Mm-hmm. But I really don't remember.
Well, you mentioned that you went out with him for how long before you got married?
Well, we knew we were going to get married. See, it was just a matter of me. We couldn't even think about setting any kind of date because after all this, I'm still married to this man.
Obviously.
And, of course, he wrote me a letter one time, and he wanted me to file suit for divorce. And I thought to myself, well, you crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that and have everybody talking about me.
Yeah.
Because everybody doesn't know the truth.
That's true.
And so, no way, no way. And Horace knew all about it. He knew. Because I told him the whole story. And so, we couldn't, you know, think about any. And we broke up a couple times, and then we made up, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And one summer he went away to work somewhere. I don't remember now. But anyhow, it was just kind of, you know, off and on.
Sure.
And see, and I just was through. And I just told him, I said, well, you know, if you want to take me to the movies or out to eat or something like that, you know, I'll be glad to go. But I just want you to know I'm dating other folks and I want you to date other folks too. Well, then he got down and boom. Started acting right. And, oh, he was playing both ends against the middle and doing all kinds of trashy stuff. And so anyhow, see, my husband died like early part of April. And we got married on the 1st of May. But the thing is that I didn't go to the funeral. I never was. Well, about 8 or 9 months, maybe about 6 months before he died, His sister called me up, and she asked me would I go up there to see him, because he wanted to see me. And I said, sure, I'll go. And I told her, I said, well, I'm going to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, because I'm going to see Bob. He didn't like it. I said, well, the man said, I'm still married to him, and his family had asked me if I'd go see him. So I went to him. And I went up there to see him, and he was glad to see me, but he was real bad, nothing but skin and bones. And so I came back, and I went over to his family house. They lived in one of these plantation-style houses, you know, the columns and all that, big house. And this is a weekend that his sister from Cincinnati was on. And I told him, I said, well, he had another sister that taught school in Detroit. I said, well, now I'm telling you and John, who was in Louisville, I'm trying to think who was the rest of the family. Remember. And I told him, I said, he is very bad. And I really think that all of you should try to go up there or bring him back to Nashville or something. Because he's in really bad shape. And they decided to bring him back to Nashville. So they sent ambulance to Hopkinsville, brought him back, and he was in his mother's house in a hospital tent. And he was only there a couple of weeks when he died. But I didn't go over there. I didn't see any reason to. Because there's no need of me putting on any front. And when he died, a close friend of the family called me up and told me that he had died and that the family wanted me to know that I was welcome to come. And I thanked her very much. And thanked her for calling. But that was the end of that. I did not go, nor did I do anything else. Because I didn't see any reason for me to put on a facade. Number one. Number two, knowing how folks are, all they wanted to do was see how I was gonna react, see. And so there's just no need to get involved. Because long before then, I had told the family how I felt about everything. And so I didn't phone, nor did I send anything. I just let alone. And about two or three weeks later, Horace and I got married, very quietly. Back then, I was married two or three days before anybody even knew about it.
That's pretty quiet, Francis.
Well, it's not hard to do in Nashville. He and Robbie, they went out of town to the next little town and got the license, so it wouldn't be in the paper.
We'll talk some more later, okay?
Yeah, because this is very...
Okay, Francis, can you elaborate a little bit more about the circumstances under which you got married to Horace Raines?
Yeah, well, we were married in church. At the altar, and the minister, when we talked to him beforehand about this, he wanted, didn't we want some flowers and this, that, and the other thing, and I told him no, because my husband was a struggling student, and Horace had his own money to go to school. I didn't put him through school. He had his own money. And, I didn't, since it was a second marriage or a third marriage for me and a second one for him, I felt that wasn't necessary. And,
didn't need all the formalities and pomp and circumstance.
He did buy the ring I wanted, which is this one. I wanted a diamond wedding band. And, my son's godmother. Of course, she wasn't my son's godmother then, but she was my very best friend. She stood up with me, and his classmate stood up with him. oldest child is our godchild. And she is a beauty chef in Carson.
Great. What is her name?
Benita. Benita Robertson.
I'd like to ask you to...
Let me tell you the rest of it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then after we went through the ceremony and everything, Bag Matter Horace came to my house to get me because we were supposed to be at the church at 6 o'clock. And Yvonne, which is Robbie's wife, Robbie was his best man, and Yvonne was much pregnant because this was in May, and she was due to have this baby in July. And they barely got there in time for the ceremony. And so, anyhow, afterwards, Betty had arranged to take everybody to dinner. So we went out to have dinner. There were a couple other people with us. I don't even remember now who it was. I have to ask ours. And we just had a good time, just laughing and talking, carrying on. Mm-hmm. And,
do you remember the name of the church in which you got married at?
It was an AME church, the only AME church in Nashville, one that I belonged to. I don't remember it right this minute, but it was a very nice church, and we had a very, very nice minister.
About your kids, Tony and Kim, I'd like you to briefly give your opinion about what you like the most about each of them. First of all, Tony.
I admire his intellect, and he's a very caring person. And he's been, you know, little kid coming up, I was always amazed at things that he could do. And so it was really, and I just really wanted children. Both of my children are adopted. And I tried so hard to have a baby, but I couldn't get pregnant. They never could figure out why. And so...
Smart and caring.
Yeah. And he's sensitive. He's just a nice person. It's just nice to be around him.
I agree. How about Kimberly?
Well,
what do you like the most about her?
Well, I'm really glad I have a daughter. See? And, in fact, I'm glad I have both of my children. I knew early in life that I did not want to grow old without children. See, I knew that. Because I was so horrible never to have any children or grandchildren. And, because when I was 18, you know, I had it in my head that I wanted 12 children. See, I always liked kids. Always did. And I'm just glad that I have a daughter. I don't like some of the attitudes that she has about things, but it's not an attitude, really. It's a problem that she has with herself. And she's very inclined to be negative, make a mountain out of a molehill. Anybody within the sound of her voice gets it. And that I don't like. But she is a caring person, and she really tries to take care of her kids and do all the things that a mother is expected to do. Sometimes she's overzealous. And Frances being...
Get some of that from you, does she? Or is that just her?
Well, I guess so. I don't know. You know, probably. For an example, you know, I was all the time, my children were growing up, I was always had placemats on the table, always had the table properly set, always knew they knew the right table manners and how to handle everything. And like we do now, since you've been here, I never did that when my kids were around. Never. And it was always, everything was just really done right. Because my idea was, children learn their habits at home. And they may not do this after they're grown. But there's one sure thing, they will know. And I have seen too many kids come to college who didn't know how, they had very poor table manners. They did not know how to select which utensil to eat with, for instance, if they were at a banquet or dinner where you had mega pieces of silverware.
Uh-huh.
And I always thought that was sad. And I felt that they should, you know, understand being neat and clean. And because when they left in the morning for school, they had to have their bed made, their room picked up. And when they left that bathroom, all the towels had to hang just so. There's no such thing as throwing stuff here and throwing stuff there. And I checked their rooms before they go to school. If it wasn't right, I'm going to be late. Tough.
Mm-hmm.
So that let them know in the final analysis that this is what they had to do. And I never demanded that they be A students, because I feel that that's a terrible cross to put on a child. Because maybe a child isn't capable of being an A student.
Right.
But that the idea was, do the very best that you can. And that their behavior in school and other places was, they pretty much knew, just like you did when you grew up, that you didn't go out and start climbing. But I think my daughter is a warm person. And I think the problems that she has are with herself. But she is improving a great deal, because her father and I have spent a lot of time talking to her in terms of, and I'm always giving her something to read, which she does read. She's willing to learn. How she should handle Frances, because Frances is going through this business of trying to be an adult and still being a child, and does all the things that teenagers want to do that you don't want them to do. And she's, like I told her mother, you know, always knock on her door before you go in there. This is what you want her to do if you're in your bedroom with the door closed. And you have to give her the same kind of respect that you expect out of her. And her mother had a way of going through her school bag when she came home, and Frances just becomes very defiant. Said, what are you looking for? Do you think I got drugs in there? And she's been approached at the school about drugs. And of course that just tore her up. But she is able to talk to her mother.
That's good.
And that I am very, very happy about. But like I tell Kim, you got to stop being so punitive about things. And she doesn't mean to be punitive. These things just pop out of her mouth.
Yeah.
And be more non-judgmental. Just listen. And Kim is very, very much aware of all the things that she's done that she didn't need to do. And she is extremely regretful. And I feel that she overcompensates, because she really doesn't want Frances to go through some of those things or to get off. Because she told Frances one day, when I was your age, you know, I thought I knew everything. Nobody could tell me anything. And that was true.
Well, I'm glad things are getting better over there, and I'm glad that I'm home. I'm sure that they will. One other broad-based question for you, and this will be the end of our little talk. I'd like you to think back and describe on tape here some fond memories that you have of your family, the Mackays. You know, something that may have to do with holidays or church or social gatherings or something along those lines. And I'm going to stop the tape, let you think a little bit, and then we'll come back to that.
Oh, I can tell you.
Don't have to stop the tape?
Mm.
Okay.
One of the things that was really, really fun in our house, Christmas was always a big time. Mother's Day was a big time. And one time, we were really little kids, but we wanted to go and get things for our mother for Mother's Day. My father would take us. He took all three of us, went to the flower shop, and we bought innumerable potted plants. And after my mother went to sleep, or before she woke up in the morning, my older brother and I tiptoed in the room, and we took all these plants, put them all around her bed like that on the floor. So when she got up, she couldn't get out of bed. She was down on pants. And she just roared. And at Christmas time, we would be real busy after we got old enough to go shopping by ourselves, hiding things. One time, one Christmas, and you know, it was always a big deal. We had a gorgeous Christmas tree, and this is before the days of electric lights, and we had candles, and my mother would light those candles every night, and they were in a candle holder that you clipped to the branch of the tree. And we'd all have to sit down and be really quiet because my mother was scared to death of fire. And it was real easy for a Christmas tree to catch fire. And we always had a nice big one, beautifully decorated. And Kim has some of those trimmings now. And some of these things are priceless.
Oh, yeah.
And
family heirlooms to boot.
Yes. And we'd make my mother go out in the kitchen, and we had a swinging door between the kitchen and the dining room, and she'd have to stay out there. My brothers and I would be running around getting her presents all together, and then I'd run out in the kitchen and get some bread, and then put the bread in the toaster, and then when we finally let her in, I had the toaster on, and while she's standing, the bread pops up. And we used to do all kinds of fun things like that with my mother.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It was. And And my mother had a really, really good relationship with all of us. And, but we used to, another time, you know, my mother and I liked to window shop. And I knew she admired these little gold hoop earrings. She had pierced ears. So one day when I came home from work, I stopped and bought these earrings. They were $20. And I came home from work. My mother was in my bedroom upstairs. She was painting the woodwork. Because she'd ask my father to do things, and he didn't move fast enough for her, she'd do it. And my brother was up there helping her. So I came in with this little box. I said, "Mom, here's something I bought for you." "You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have done that." I said, "Why not?" "You should have spent this on yourself." My mother was always like that. "You should have spent this on yourself." I said, "No. I knew you'd like these little earrings, and I wanted you to have them." And so that's that. It's just like the day we went down to... Oh, I haven't told you about how we went down to get this furniture.
You did, but not on tape here, so go ahead.
Well, my mother wanted to have... We loved doing things for her. Okay. It was making it a surprise. Mm-hmm. We worked overtime at that. Okay. And I had asked her to meet me at Bartels. Because I always asked her to go shopping with me. My mother had very good taste. And so anyhow, when I met her there, I was working at General Hospital then. And so I said, "Well, come on, Mom." I said, "We're going in here." She says, "What for?" I said, "Well, because I'm going to buy you something." She said, "No, you're not." I said, "Yes, I am." "No, you're not." I said, "Yes, I am." And so I said, "Now,